Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hello, Jay. Hello, everyone else.
And everyone else. To all our listeners out there.
Yeah. How's it going?
This is 2 weeks in a row, man. We're on a roll. We're starting a new streak.
We are. It's good. It's good to get going on this again.
Yeah. We'd gone like 4 years straight without a break, and then just kidding.
No, that's not. I was thinking, wait, did we? You had me for a second.
You had me at hello. Yes. No, we're here two weeks in a row, and which is important, you know, because we're just jumping right in, man. Mm-hmm. I don't have any nonsense to talk about.
Yeah. Sorry. We don't have any shenanigans.
I do have two cardinals that a couple that have been like frolicking in our backyard. It's very sweet.
That's awesome.
They chase each other around our backyard.
They have such a distinct call. That's one of the birds. I can't recognize very many by their call, but that's one. It's beautiful.
I recognize them when I see them.
Yeah, they're easy to pick up.
But they do. They do. And then we had deer back in our backyard, and I just said, man, if like we need, what do we need to complete this Disney movie picture in our backyard right now? Because the cardinals were chasing each other, and then the deer and the fawn, like there were two babies and a mama, and it was so
Thumper. You need Thumper.
We need a Thumper. And we have them. Like, we have lots of bunnies around and squirrels. And, you know, I said a skunk.
Oh, yeah.
Skunk needed to come out. And Lauren's like, we don't need that. I mean,
no, unfortunately, they can be kind of pests, huh?
Yes, they can. Speaking of pests, I could be a pest.
I was like, what did I trigger there?
I felt like I was being a pest on Sunday.
About the sermon, you mean?
Yep. That was my best transition.
Okay, that's good.
We talked about giving. We talked about money.
Yeah, money.
Money's fun.
I didn't feel like you were being a pest, Jay, just so you know.
Thanks.
I have a lot of good notes from it.
Yep. You always have to do the disclaimer up front. I had a couple of people, or one person in particular, said that they remember inviting people, and their very first Sunday was, I happened to be teaching on giving, and she was like, of course that's going to happen. And
yeah.
It's funny the number of times that's happened, but and what's also interesting is like that family kept coming back. So mm-hmm. I do think that churched people actually find it weirder than unchurched people, and or find it more uncomfortable, as with a lot of things. I mean, we talk about that with like sharing the gospel. The people who are most uncomfortable with sharing the gospel are churched people.
Yes,
like.
Well, we misuse our imaginations.
We do.
About that. And yeah, that's true. I mean, I think in the way you approached it and the way, you know, in the New Testament, when you study giving and money, it doesn't have to be something that is like, it gets at the heart of what discipleship to Jesus is. And I love that that's how you approached it on Sunday. It's not, I think we often think of laws and we think of belonging and guilt, right? And weird ways of displaying wealth that has happened. I mean, that's just happened. You asked for forgiveness on behalf of all the ways that that has been done poorly. And that needs to be done because sadly that has been done poorly by the church, you know, big church. But it's not how Jesus taught about it. It's not how his apostles taught about it. So we can redeem that, right?
Yeah. I mean, we can, and we have to.
Yes.
I mean, that's the thing, is this is not an issue that we can shy away from, you know, and it's probably the issue that people, I just don't know of an issue that is so central in scripture that we so clearly kind of run away from. There might be some other things, but this is a big one that as far as a central teaching that Jesus that all of scripture, but then Jesus specifically teaches on that we get really uncomfortable and we just can't help ourselves from falling into a ditch. And so I said, you know, like the one ditch is that we teach on it in a way where it's like, where we're just constantly begging for money or treating it as though that's the thing that that God will like give you more money and that's the way to prosperity or whatever, kind of like buying your way into God's blessings. But then the response to that often has been like, I just don't want to talk about it. And I've fallen in that. For years in my ministry, I fell into the trap of just like, I just don't even want to talk about it. Like, I'm just going to trust the Holy Spirit to do what he's going to do. I just don't even want to talk about it. And that's just, that's unfaithful. So we need to talk about it.
And it's, you know, interesting for me and you, I think you mentioned it this Sunday about us being partnered with Faith Church financially when we were missionaries, you know, for mm-hmm. like 13 years or whatever. And it was always really interesting when you are a missionary and you're building partnerships that way, where you're having proactive conversations with people about finances. It's really a fascinating thing. Again, a thing in which if you're looking from the outside, you could imagine it going like maybe being more difficult than it is. Like you mentioned earlier, like, oh man, the person's brand new and they're hearing about giving, that's horrible. But, you know, the longer I did that, I wouldn't say that I ever was like, I can't wait to have the next conversation about stewardship and money. But I found those conversations to be beautiful and actually really joyful mm-hmm. with people when we would talk about stewarding God's resources and what he had called us into. And to see, you know, I transitioned out of an IT job. And then to see God provide for our family for that long through that means, where we never, you know, we were never, college students don't have money, right? So the people we were ministering to did not contribute financially to what we were doing.
Right.
But other people did. And to see the generosity and to see a heart, I feel like what I'm trying to say is I've gotten to see pictures of people who are walking this path of being joyful and generous givers, and to watch the fruit in their life has been an amazing thing to get to see. I feel like it was a really unique window into how people do that and to how they make those decisions. And I will tell you, in my experience, you know, there's examples of this in scripture, like someone giving a small amount, but it being a large percentage of what they have. Mm-hmm. I've seen that work out in real life, you know, or like the grad student who you wouldn't imagine giving, you know, maybe giving a one-time thing, $100, giving like a huge check that did something significant in our lives. I've seen God do that. And I think that's one of the reasons it's so important to talk about giving, because rather than it being this anchor and guilt-ridden thing that we just avoid, it can actually be a source of significant joy in our connection with Jesus when yeah. we walk with him in it. And we miss out on that joy when we avoid it, is what I'm saying. The bummer is, you did this so well in the sermon, we have to overcome baggage and we have to overcome poor teaching and even misuse of it that we've either heard about. Everyone's heard about it, I think, and many people have experienced it.
Yeah, and also we have to overcome our own obstacles, you know, that we have to acknowledge the fact that one of the reasons why we're uncomfortable with talking about it is because we don't want to feel convicted about it either. Mm-hmm. So there have been many perversions in the church over the topic of giving, but I think it's also important for us to take some responsibility of knowing, like, yeah, we're also prone to not want to hear it, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I think, which is different than some other theological issues that have been perverted in the church over the years. And then when you actually hear it, like, I would say the gospel is that, like, if a works-based salvation has been something you've heard a lot, when you actually hear the gospel, it's like, it's so freeing and so exciting. And we want to hear that, but this is one of those things of like, oh, it's so much easier. I find that in anything that I don't really want to hear, if I can blame somebody else for it, then it kind of absolves me of having to really deal with it. You know, like, well, it's the church's fault because they don't teach about it right. Or all they want is my money. And so therefore I don't. So now that's my excuse for not being generous. And it's like, well, that actually only, yes, that's true. They perverted the message, but that is not, you know, their sin is not an excuse for our sin. And so there's just so much that has to be, I think, untangled, you know, in just in our mindset of that. And so I really wanted to make it clear. And that, so what I think would be helpful in the podcast is that, you know, again, kind of recalibrate ourselves around this idea that this is a discipleship issue, and it's an issue of trust and faith. And it is actually, it's a gift from God that he gives us this as a way to exercise faith. Because often, I mean, I think most people who are trying to follow Jesus say, I want to grow in my faith. How do I grow in my faith? And we typically go to, well, you know, read your Bible more, pray more, be active, serve. Those are all great things. But we gloss over probably, you know, for lack of a better term, the biggest bang for the buck, which is like, what's going to test your faith the most immediately? It's giving. And not only that, that's the thing that God says to test him in this, that he will provide. And so it's this unique opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to exercise faith, and God has told me I should do this, and watch how he provides and meets my needs. There aren't too many other things that are that tangible, right? And yes, we would say the same thing about reading the Bible, that if I'm disciplined in reading the word, like we would say, we want to talk about reading the Bible, not as a transactional, you know, passing of knowledge or gaining of information, but as actually communing with God and hearing his voice. We want to talk about prayer as a communion with God and interaction with God, not a just like, well, I'm going to throw up these empty phrases and not listen, but just like, here's my list. So every act of faith is meant to be a relational act of faith, and giving's no different. So that was kind of the aim of setting that up, that Jesus, and this is how critical Jesus says it is. You know, it's a really striking statement that he says you cannot serve both God and money, or both God and manna, like that, the God of money. Like he raises money to this level of deity in a way that he doesn't with other things.
Mm-hmm.
Like even, just you think about all the ways in which, all the things that Jesus teaches, all the ways in which he calls the disciples into deeper faith, all the things he says, even in the Sermon on the Mount, you know, he teaches hard things, but that's the one where he says, this is actually about your allegiance.
Yeah. And Colossians is another example of that, where it says, this is in Colossians 3, and Paul has a list of things to put to death, part of your earthly nature, your non-renewed nature and brokenness. And he has a list, and he ends it with evil desires and greed, and then he qualifies it, which is idolatry. And yeah. It's very, very clear that it's a demonstration of our heart's greatest loves, where our hearts find security. And if you can flip it on its head, so a love and devotion to a thing, you feel that love and devotion to the thing when it's threatened, you feel fearful. So like if the money starts to be depleted in a way that you're uncomfortable with, you fear. And that's all part of that. Some of it is like, yeah, I need to provide, but a lot of it is there's something else going on in our hearts. And Jesus, he very bluntly teaches about it. And, you know, I like what you said too, like, do we want to hear this? And there is an aspect of that in our own hearts. Do we want to hear it? And I guess I would encourage people from a pastoral, like discipleship perspective, to hear this as Jesus calling us to greater life and freedom.
Right.
You know, like we always need to frame our discipleship to him through grace, the gospel, and what he is doing. It's not a measuring up, right? And I really do think the word stewardship is important. Like, and it's part of how we acknowledge his lordship over all things and his ownership over us, his ownership over all the things we have. And our role is a steward of the things that actually are his, including, you know, our whole life. But money is the thing we're talking about right now. But if we don't frame it that way, I think under grace and the gospel, that's, I think, so our hearts can so easily turn to self-righteousness or guilt.
Right.
We have these reactions then that are not productive.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's the thing. That's the tricky thing. We've talked before, I mean, many times about how the enemy doesn't care which ditch he pushes you into. He's going to push you into the ditch that you are most willing to go into. And so, yes, often talking about giving, there's clearly guilt that people will feel, which again is one of the reasons why we don't pass the plate, because I don't want to I don't want to give people the opportunity to just like, okay, now I feel less guilty. You know, I threw in a $10 bill and I feel less guilty, and I don't care about your $10. Like, and it's not because it's like, it's a small amount. For some people that would actually be tithing, and they would be giving, that would be radical generous giving. I care about that $10 because I care about the heart behind it. And I actually don't want to facilitate or give opportunity for somebody to just say like, oh, I can assuage this guilt. But then on the other side is the self-righteousness that can come with obeying the law. You know, like we'll talk about this here in a minute about tithing, but that like, okay, well, no, I do that. I've checked that box and I obey that. And so, you know, why isn't everybody else obeying the law like I'm obeying the law? And that's a real danger too. And ultimately it is just, it's an act of faith. And so one of the things I thought might be helpful is I did get one question, and I thought that question could go into a helpful practical conversation of then how do we help people grow in this wherever they are? Like, there may be people listening right now who have never regularly given to the church, all the way to people who have been tithing for, you know, decades. So like, it's the whole range, but the message from God is the same, the call is the same, and the opportunity to grow in faith is the same, right? So it just might look a little different. So I think it'd be good to look at that. So the question I got, which is a really common question, whenever I teach on giving, there are two big questions, and those are kind of the two questions we'll use to frame, I think, this discussion. So the two big questions are that I always get whenever I teach on giving are, does it matter where you give? Do I have to give to the church, or does it, if I give to other good causes, is that the same thing? And then secondly, is there a percentage? Like, is tithing still, you know, the law of the land? Like, is 10% what, and then that, there's all kinds of auxiliary questions that go with that. I mean, I often get the question of like, well, if it's 10%, is that before taxes or after taxes and all that stuff? So I want to frame it around those two questions. So first, do you have to give to the church, or does it matter? Is it just about generosity and giving to some good cause? So I'm going to ask you that. I want to hear what you say, and then I'll tell you if you were right or wrong.
I would love to hear, as you think about critiquing my answer,
yes.
What passages you think of when you think of this, but I have been on the receiving end of, this is just being vulnerable here, I think bad counsel on this in the form of very rigid, you must give 10% to your local church. And if you do not give 10% to your local church and you're giving to anything else, you're in sin. And I would challenge that, because I would say, I don't know what verse you're thinking of that says that specifically. What I would say is, if you're part of the body of Christ, like our local church here, thinking really locally, and you are giving but not to the local church you're part of, that you, I would want to know why. You know what I mean? Because my assumption would be you would give to the family that you belong to and contribute in the family you belong to as a priority. And then I would also assume that people in our church would give to other causes. And I would make a distinction, at least in my own heart, between causes that are gospel proclaiming, discipleship oriented versus just general charity. In my mind, they are different. And I think both are important. But I think just when I think of prioritizing where giving goes. So I guess my general answer, you know, to a person who asked me that would be, first, I'd want to know, why wouldn't you give to the people you belong to? It seems to me sort of odd that you would choose not to. I would say there must be some reason or something that happened. So I would say, yes, give to where you belong. And if God brings people across your path, you have connections relationally, give to them too. I think as someone who was on the receiving end for, you know, 13 years as a missionary, if someone had told me we give to you and not to our local church, that would have concerned me greatly. I would not have been okay with that. because I do believe you are to be contributing to the people you belong to. And part of belonging to the people is sharing that way. So, I mean, one passage that comes to my mind, Jay, is like early on in Acts where this is a bit more radical than what we're talking about, but they had all things in common with each other. And so they were definitely a resource sharing, which I would assume if they had all things in common, that would also include money. That picture of just belonging to people who are caring for each other and then for the mission that God has them on, to me, it just makes sense, right? So I don't know, how would you tear me apart there? But that's where my heart goes. Like, I guess maybe that was more of a heartfelt statement than a deep theological one, but that's how I would work through that practically.
Well, I think you actually hit on a theme that I do want us to always be aware of. We, all of us, have been affected by bad counsel. Mm-hmm. All of us have had bad experiences. I mean, I shouldn't say all of us, but a lot of people have had bad experiences in churches. I mean, there are things that I look back on how I taught it 20 years ago. I'm like, oh, I wish I hadn't taught it that way. So it's not just like saying, well, they're all bad teachers or unfaithful people, but we tend to, and this happens all throughout church history, we tend to push back harder against challenges that we are facing, and it can get kind of disproportionate. So in other words, it's the idea of every action gets an opposite reaction. And so when the church is dealing with a particular issue, we tend to be really like push hard on that. We say that in purity culture is an example of that, where you're just like, okay, we just went overboard. But I think tithing is one of those, because it was becoming very commonplace for people to just give wherever. And so you had pastors who were like, well, but you need to be given first here. And so then that leads to people giving very strong statements on what that sounds like. However, that doesn't change where there might be truth in what's being said. And so I used to be more kind of like, it doesn't really matter. But here's the rationale I give. I do think it matters where mm-hmm. a person gives. Mm-hmm. I do think the first priority, and it's very similar to what you said, like this isn't about numbers, but it is about priorities. And mm-hmm. so I would say first priority should be to your local church. Well, why do I say that? Well, I say that for several reasons, not the least of which, I mean, one, you see it in Acts. Mm-hmm. So especially chapters 2, 4, 5, 6, you see the importance of this. And every one of those chapters, they are talking about there is a sense of responsibility that they now take for one another. You think about Acts 6 when they appoint the deacons. The issue is that the Hellenist widows were not being cared for. They were meant to be one body. And so they came up and they said, look, our widows are not being cared for with the daily distribution. And so they said, this can't be. We need to make sure that we are all, that our local body here is taken care of. And so if God's people is a family, and so the local church is like the immediate family, well, then that parallel is so strong. Then I would draw on verses like 1 Timothy 5:8, when Paul says to Timothy, but if anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Galatians 6, I don't have it in front of me, but Galatians 6, where he says, do not miss take advantage of the opportunity to do good, especially for those in the members of the household of faith. So like there is a concentric circle idea to how God provides through his family. And you see it practically in the family structure. So God ordained the family structure. That did not get created by man or by society or anything else. It is God instituted the family structure as a way of this concentric circle of care. It's actually the family unit is a brilliant way to make sure that people don't slip through the cracks. Now, when it's broken, people fall through the cracks. But in the way that God has created it, it's meant to be this concentric circle. So, for example, I care that there are hungry children in our community. and I should give mm-hmm. and make sure and do whatever I can to make sure that kids have food mm-hmm. in our community. But if I do that to the neglect of my own children, nobody would see that as good. If mm-hmm. I ever had, if my child was starving and somebody confronted me about that and I said, well, I feed lots of kids, that would not be okay. And so there's that parallel that we see how God kind of builds these concentric circles. And so for a Christian who does not give to their local church family and does not make it that their first priority, I would say that's broken. Now, that's not meant, I mean, we live in a culture where we don't understand the church as family a lot. We understand the church as a nonprofit organization that helps me grow in my faith, but not as family. And that is different. And so, then it becomes a cause. And I would just say that your local church is not a cause. It's your family. And when we see it as a cause, then it's like, oh, well, I give to things I like. I remember the church I grew up in had tons of designated giving categories. So that if you wanted to give, if you specifically like the youth ministry, you could give to the youth ministry. And specifically, you have a heart for technology and the youth ministry. And so you want to give to the tech line. You
know, oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
It was super different.
Batty.
Yeah.
And it's like, what in the world? Like that. That's not healthy because that is me wanting to be in control of what's going on and then seeing the church as a cause. And I like this part, but not this part. And I'm sorry, I'm going on, but this is my argument for it. I was a part of a church one time. It's no secret. Well, for a lot of people, they wouldn't know, but when we planted in Denver, we planted house churches. I'm a big fan of simplicity. I'm not a big fan of massive buildings and big capital campaigns for, you know, large extravagant facilities. I just don't think that my conscience is not at peace with that. And I was a part of a church that was doing a massive capital campaign and they were asking all the members to get on board with it. And I was a member and I had this struggle because I did not agree with what they were going to do with the money. So then the question became like, well, do I continue to give? And through much prayer and conversations with Lauren and kind of working through that, we determined this is our family. I am not the one who is like authoritative in this situation. This is our family. And so we will continue to give to our family. And it is not my, you know, now obviously if they were using the money to do something immoral, but if that was the case, I would leave the church. So, right. So that's the decision. Like I had to get to a place where I said, if what they are doing with this money is so counter to the gospel in my mind, well, then that means I don't trust the leadership of this church and I shouldn't be a part of this church anymore. Does that make sense? Like, so that was ending up being the choice. It was like, stay and continue to give, because this is my local family, or don't give, but then leave and go find another family.
Yeah, that makes, I mean, to me, not only does that make sense, it underscores that it's an act of trust and faith, right? I mean, so when we give and we don't have 100% control over where every dollar is spent, we are also entrusting ourselves in that moment, I believe, to God and to the community that we belong to. And that's part of it. I mean, we want control, right? That's like one of our great desires, and part of following Jesus is learning what it looks like that we are always saying, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as in heaven, in this church as in heaven. And part of that is giving up some of our control. And even like, I love that act of saying, yeah, I disagree with this, you know, whatever, but I'm going to continue to give. And because ultimately it's the giving is vertical.
Right.
Right. It's a reflection of our connection with God and our obedience to Jesus. It affects us horizontally with each other. Obviously we're part of it, but it's vertical. That's ultimately where it is. And And like you said, if it got to the point where it was that big of a concern, then there's conversations that happen. And sadly, that might mean like we are so misaligned that I need to depart. But that feels extreme, right? For most cases, it's not that. But yeah, that's a great example, Jay.
And I would point out too that it is a heart issue. So when we talk about, so what I don't want people to hear is a person who has not thought about the church as a family and taking responsibility to feel like shamed or a guilt trip for that, because it's a heart issue. So some people look at it and say, man, well, yeah, I'm giving to missionaries because I know that there's a need there. You can have a bad heart and really believe in giving locally. Like I've had those situations before where people, their motivation for giving locally is because they want the best resources themselves.
Mm.
Right. So, so like I'm giving locally because I want to make sure we can staff this program that I really like, or I want to have a nice place to go to worship. That's not a heart that pleases God either. So it's not just the act of, oh, well, if you give first to your local church, you're fine. And if you don't, you're not fine. It's not like it's a heart issue. What I would say, all I'm trying to lay out is if the church's family, which that's issue number one, we just tend to struggle to think about what does that mean that the church is family. But if it's my family, then I'm responsible here. And so I need to make sure that first and foremost, our church family is being taken care of. Now, if there's questions of stewardship, like that's where the church has struggled. And that's why I gave the example of the building campaign. There's other ways of dealing with that. But yeah, churches have misused a lot of funds, sometimes really egregiously, like criminally, and sometimes just like flippantly of like, well, yeah, I mean, we bought these things because we have the money for it. And shame on us. Like we need to do better. We need to make sure that we're functioning and we try to function really efficiently. But this is the reason why, again, I talked about not passing the plate, but it's also why we don't beg for money. Like so it's very common, like end of the year, to send out a letter like, hey, everybody, we're this far behind the budget. We've never done that. Now, I'm not saying I would never, ever do that. Like if I feel like people are not aware of what's going on, like I want to make sure people are aware. However, my bent is typically, we don't do that any more than I make my kids beg for food at the dinner table. Like think about how strange it would be to like wait for my kids to, you know, to say like, I'm really hungry. Could you get me some food? And then think like, okay. And then feel like really great about myself, 'cause I just gave them a peanut butter sandwich. I proactively feed my children. They don't need to constantly ask. Now, sometimes if they have a special need or a special hunger, they ask and make me aware of it. But they don't have to convince me that it's my responsibility, right? And that's the thing that I, like, we want to cultivate a culture where as a church family, we just say, this is our responsibility. Of course, like, of course I'm going to give first here. And then because I believe that God will provide everything we need to accomplish all that he's called us to accomplish. And just like a family that maybe their income goes down, they don't just stop being a family and they don't continue to live at the level that they were living at. They readjust. Maybe they move into a smaller house. Maybe they stop going out to eat. Maybe they don't take a big vacation. Maybe their vacation now is like camping locally rather than going to Paris. Those are all things that, you know, we need to also be able to do is that, you know, as the church family gives generously, that may mean, okay, well, we don't have the resources, you know, that we had 15 or 20 years ago. You know, the landscape of the church is changing. And so we're not guaranteed any of those things. We're guaranteed that God will provide for us. So anyway, that's my big argument for why I unapologetically say your first priority is the local church family. If you don't see that as a family, that's step one. See your local church as the family that God, the concentric circles that God has chosen. This is how this is funneled. I would guarantee you I mean, I feel like I can say this really boldly, that if Paul caught wind that the church in Philippi was not caring for the people in their own church family and that they were instead giving money to him, he would have rebuked them. And he would have said, first make sure that your family is taken care of. And then out of like generosity to be a conduit, but that's one of the reasons we want to be efficient with our resources and good stewards, not so that we can be stingy, but that so that we can be generous. If we can spend $10,000 less on ministry this year, and it doesn't affect, and we're able to care for the spiritual needs and the physical needs of our church family, well then great, that's $10,000 we could give to one of our missionaries, you know, or to several of our missionaries, or to something else. And so to your point, I do think there's a big difference. Like I would put the priority, like first priority is to give to the local church family and make sure those needs are being met. And then even as a church, we do this. Mm-hmm. Not all of our money goes internally. We support these missionaries. I think this church has always been really generous with their monthly support. So when you give, like, for example, when you give to our church, you're also supporting those missionaries, because a big, you know, there's a sizable chunk that goes to those missionaries. We give to other things. And so you can give here, and we give our surplus in abundance other places, but then also you can do that. You can partner directly with missionaries. And so I would say the second tier is missionaries. And then after that would be just other random needs in your community where you are living and sharing the gospel and like taking care of somebody, buying somebody a meal, giving towards a family that's had a crisis happen. Like these are all really, I would just say Girl Scout cookies are way down the list. And I remember that being a thing of like, yeah, I buy Girl Scout cookies. I've had people say that to me and I'm like, yeah, it's, I mean, by all means, they're delicious, you know, go for it. But
well, having an imagination for generosity that is expressed relationally,
yeah,
rather than just organizationally, is really key, right? Like that's what you just
described.
You
would have saved so much time if you had just said that.
Well, I just like that. I like the picture you painted there at the end, like a need that you encounter because you and all of us live in a place, and there are needs in the place we live. And sometimes the best way to help with those needs is to give to an organization who specializes on that need. But other times I really think as we get right next to needs, we will be able to personally know, I need to give here. This family is in need. I'm going to help them. I'm going to serve them with money and time and energy. And yeah, so I think moving our money from a category in our mind that is just primarily not relational and mechanistic to a relational one, both with God and stewarding what he's given us, but also towards those needs. And seeing our church family as a family, right? I think that's a key point. It feels different too, by the way, when you see it that way. You could have the same result that it could, but feels very differently.
It does feel different. And that's one of the reasons why, man, you're right. Relationally, that's the key. Like God designs giving to be relational. It's a relational first and foremost with him, exhibiting trust in him as our provider and not putting our hope in our ability to provide for ourselves. But then relationally with seeing the church's family, relationally with missionaries that you're partnering with, relationally in the ministry that you're doing in your day-to-day life, it's not meant to be organizational. And like you said, it doesn't mean you don't give to organizations, mm-hmm. but there's a reason why you're doing that. It's not, and realizing the church is not the same as those other ones. Like your local church family is different. It's just different. So, okay. So then that leads into the next question, which is, okay, so then what does that look like? You know, whether a person sitting here listening and saying, man, I've never really committed to giving, like I've given occasionally to the church. I give occasionally, like I've never, like what does it actually look like? You know, and what, like as far as frequency, you know, percentage, like what help does the Bible give us to know? Is there any help to know, or is it just like so vague because it's all, you know, because it is all about the heart, but are there any handholds? You know, we do this like with reading the Bible, you know, we talk about daily quiet time. Well, there's a way in which thinking about a daily quiet time is really helpful because it creates a rhythm that is a healthy means of grace, like a healthy rhythm that where God meets us in that and that we're regularly reading the Bible. However, none of us would say that that, so if you read the Bible every day at the same time in the same chair, then you are being faithful. And if you don't, then you're not. But it's a guide, it's a help, mm-hmm. you know? So what would you say?
Well, I mean, I think what comes to a lot of people's minds, including mine, is just the really Old Testament principle that they lived off was the tithe. And you see it being manifested in the Gospels, especially a lot of attempts to undermine Jesus's ministry by showing that somehow his disciples don't do that, or he doesn't believe it, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think the tithe being 10% is a really important guide. But what I would add to that is not as a law. So I think that's an important idea. When we start thinking about giving quantities, frequencies, if we turn it too quickly into this is a law, I think our hearts are prone to do things that like we've just spent a lot of time describing a different way. So I would say 10% would be a really good number to have in your mind. And the way that works out though, for each one of us is it's not going to be uniform. So what I mean by that is if you're listening right now and you're thinking, yeah, I do want to start giving. I do. But 10%, I don't know if I can do that like this month. I would say, yeah, that's pretty normal that you couldn't do that immediately. But what I would say, I would love to have, by the way, if you're listening to this and you want to have a conversation about it, Jay and I would love to have conversations about it. Because I do think this is a conversation that can be misconstrued when we're generalizing, and really can be helpful when we get practical. But if you start giving, maybe you say, I'm gonna start at 5%. And then my goal is every month or every 6 months, I'm going to review and see, can I increase that? How can I increase that? And what I mean by that is thinking about those key words that we've been hearing in all these passages, like cheerful, generous. Like those are some of the words you want to have in your mind when you're thinking about where am I going to start and where am I going to end? If you just have 10% in your mind, I think you miss the New Testament principles of giving by grace and by power that he provides. Does that make sense, Jay? Like what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think the 10% can be really helpful. I think if that's all we use, we are really missing out.
Yeah, because again, going back to the relational piece, like I think it's a help that he gives us, that God gives us, that just is, it's a help. It's a help like, you know, like we would talk about rising early in the morning and praying, and just even when he talks about like teaching the principles, like as you know, teaching God's law, as you walk along the path, like when you get up, like the festivals and feasts, like communion, he gives us like, how frequently should we proclaim the Jesus's death until he returns? Well, you know, as often as you do this in remembrance of me, like as often as you get together, he gives us communion. So like, we could say, man, should we be taking communion, you know, for every meal? Well, in a sense we do. You give thanks in every meal. The point being that God does this in so many areas where he gives us a guideline, something to kind of hang on to so that we can practice something while we and we check the condition of our heart in it. And so if you think of the tithe of 10% and your heart says there's no way I'm giving that much. Like I'll give 20 bucks every once in a while. Well, that's a heart issue. Mm-hmm. And if you give 10% and that's super easy for you and you just feel super self-righteous about the fact that, you know, you've always given 10%, that's also a problem. So doing the thing, is only a it's like an indicator. It's a like, hey, here's this thing. But I do think we want to give some practical ideas here. And we've talked about this before, but you know, one way is like you'd mentioned this. Did you mention this just now or did you mention it before the pod? But the idea of start somewhere.
Yeah.
So here's a guide I would give to if you are in a place where you're like, I give irregularly. I would say have that be a regular rhythm. And I would encourage you to give at a level, whatever that level is, where it hurts a little bit. Like it stretches you a little bit, where it's like, okay, this is an act of faith. This happens a lot, by the way, for people who are self-employed. There are a lot of people who wait until the end of the year and then they tithe on what they brought in during the year. I get that. I'm not saying that that's inherently wrong to do, but I do think that there's something being missed there, because at that point it's like, okay, well now I know how much, like there's a lack of you're missing out on the opportunity to say, I'm going to give in faith and trust that God's going to provide. That's not to say that, okay, you start giving at a certain level and then you're a business owner and your business tanks and now you have like all of a sudden no money coming in and like, okay, but I already committed that I was going to give this much or whatever. Like that's not what we're talking about. But I would encourage to use that as a guide and then start giving somewhere where it stretches you. And then at the end of the year, make note on these two questions. One, do I feel like God provided for me? Can I look back over this year and maybe even journal through the year times where you feel like, man, God really provided for me here. You know, it could be things that feel silly, you know, but they're not, you know, it could be that, oh, okay, well, if we give this much, then we're not going to be able to take the vacation we normally take. And then all of a sudden somebody offers you their place on a lake that they're like, hey, we're not using this for this week if you want to go. And like, that's a way God provides. And so ask, like, did he provide? And then the other question is, did I worry less about my finances? I find this to be a really helpful question for people when they're stretching themselves in giving. Ask yourself, like, because our common worldly wisdom would be, well, if I want to worry less about my money, I should hold on to more of it. But that doesn't work. Hoarding does not work. And anybody who hoards anything never has enough of that thing. That's why they continue to hoard. That's why they have the show Hoarders. You never have enough when you feel like your security is how much I can keep. And so a very common tangible result is that when people give generously, they find themselves, when they look back on that season, that they worried less about money. And, you know, I'm not making this stuff up. This is a very common verse that is used, but I want you to hear what God's actually saying in it. Malachi 3:10, you know, he already said, will man rob God? And yet you're robbing me. Well, go back to verse 8. He says, will man rob God? Yet you are robbing me. But you say, how have we robbed you? In your tithes and contributions. And so that's the part that often gets quoted, like in the church, like if you're not tithing, then you're robbing God. But I want you to hear the whole reason he's bringing it up is at verse 10. He says, bring the full tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house, and thereby put me to the test, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open the windows of heaven for you and pour down for you a blessing until there is no more need. And so this is one of the verses that I wanted to work into the sermon, but just, you know, interest of time. But this is a reflection then that is reiterated when Jesus says you cannot serve God and money. Like the only options are I'm robbing from God or I'm giving and he is blessing me bountifully. There's no like neutral in this. There's no like, okay, well you did enough and like, okay, I'll make sure you got what you need. It is there. Do you want to receive bountiful blessing and generosity from God? Do you want to experience that? Well then give fully. Like, don't withhold anything, because otherwise what you're doing is you're saying, no, I can provide for myself. And so when he says, put me to the test, that's a really uncommon phrase in scripture for God to use, but he uses it. And he says, and so I would take that as to say, so stretch yourself, give fully, give what you have determined in your heart to give cheerfully, not under compulsion, and then watch. Like he says, put me to the test and see. Like, if I will not open the windows of heaven for you and pour down for you a blessing until there's no more need. Watch what he does and see if he's faithful. And then at the end of that year, if you answer, man, yeah, God has really provided for me over this year. And yeah, I found myself not worrying about provision or money. Well, then give more at that point. Like, why would you not give more at that point? Why would you not give another percent? Maybe mm-hmm. you started at like 5%. Why would you not give 6% next year? Yep. Why would you not give 7%?
Yeah, it's growing and stretching and growing and stretching. And with that is delight and joy and increasing joy. And I think I love your idea too of like journaling about that, really trying to track what your heart does throughout that year of starting to give. But I think for anyone who's been giving, I would encourage you, if you've been giving for 40 years, do that. How are you experiencing yeah. God provide for you? How do you see it happening? And start to take note of it. And to me, that gets right at, again, what we've been saying. This is a relational thing. Like, giving is relational, and we can trust him. We can trust him. He's going to take care of us, and he wants our delight. So that means our joy, which means he's going to disentangle us from those idols that won't bring that. And this is part of that. This is why this is so crucial, is he's in the process, as we give, of freeing us from the things that are that give us false hope. They're false promises of fulfillment and joy and security when it's only really found in him. And yeah, giving's a great way to lean into that.
Right. And you just said, even if you've been given 40 years, like if you're sitting there thinking like, I give 20%, awesome. Has God provided for you? Do you feel blessed in that? Have you worried less? Well, give 21% this year. Take on another missionary. Give a little extra to some missionary that you're supporting. You know, or like what some people I know that have gotten to this point of giving where they're giving, you know, large percentages, like keep some of that like in your pocket. Like that's just meant for, I just am going to bless people on a, you know, when I see people in need, I'm just going to bless them. And that, like, watch how God works in that. So I think that's one thing, is whatever, wherever you are in that. And man, I'm speaking from experience. You know, my parents always set a really great example in this. And so that's something that, you know, Lauren and I have always followed. However, I can speak from experience of saying like what happens when you kind of just get into a lull where you're just like, yeah, it's just normal. And as soon as it becomes normal, like I felt convicted even preparing for this and saying like, I feel like I've gotten into another normal place where the amount we're giving, it just feels like, yeah, of course we're doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, okay, well then maybe I need to up that a little bit to say, okay, remember this is an act of faith and God has put us in a different position. So let's like, what would it look like to give more than 10%, 12%, 14%, like whatever that is, like, what does it look like?
And that, I mean, what you're describing there is why I think approaching the concept of tithing as an encouragement and a help rather than a law is so important, right? Because mm-hmm. that our hearts are going to need to grow in generosity for our entire lives. And it's going to look different in different seasons, right? But if we just take the law part of it, I have a hard time believing, I don't know how we would do that. Because I think we can get comfortable with our generosity, right? Which is an odd thing to think about, but I do think that happens.
It's almost a question of, is it generosity if I'm comfortable with, mm-hmm. and both, again, it's not like, I don't want to, not begrudgingly, not under compulsion, but cheerfully. And why would it be joyful? Why would it be cheerful? Because you know how God responds to that. And so you're just excited to see, what is it going to look like for him to provide, you know, for my needs. And it's important to remember that like the tithe was not God's plan for the flat tax. Which I remember, you remember that was like such a big deal for a while of like, there should just be a flat tax. There shouldn't be tax brackets. Shouldn't be. Well, you know, the reality is that some people listening to this have very little expendable income. Like a huge chunk of their money goes towards food, clothing, and shelter. And so the amount that they have to give is small, but you know, we point to passages like the poor widow's offering that the amount of faith that it takes to give that, like the homeless man that I shared, you know, that gave, you know, the dollar value of those chocolate chip cookies that he was handing out was not very much, but it's an incredible gift and act of faith. And that's the blessing that you receive. So if you're sitting there thinking, gosh, I don't have very much to give, don't worry about that. You know, I said that I don't, you know, I'm sure if someone could pull out the quote, like, I don't want your $10. I said that earlier, and you pull that out and you could make a ringtone about that. But what I don't want is it as a penance, right? Like I don't want that. But if that's your offering, you know, because in faith, like you're giving and that is an act of faith to give that $10 and you're doing that, then that is a beautiful $10. Mm-hmm. I'll take that over. There's some people who assuage their guilt with a $1,000 check because they can do that because mm-hmm. it's no big deal.
It's the same as the 10.
It's the same as the $10.
Yeah.
So I would say, I don't want your $1,000. Like if that's what it is, I don't want that. But if it's faithful giving where you're an act of worship and a sense of responsibility for our church family, that's beautiful, whatever the amount is. So I would say, however long you've been giving, like test, don't forget about testing God in this and seeing how he provides, and whatever amount that is for you, like do that joyfully and don't worry about, oh, you know, like I mentioned 2 weeks ago, a lot of people say, well, once I'm financially stable, then I'll start giving. Well, that never happens. People who think that don't, and without a radical change where they realize, oh, that was the wrong attitude to have. I've had that happen where people have said that and then they feel convicted and realize that was always a bad attitude and then they've started to give. But if you keep that philosophy, you'll never get to a place where, you know, that you have enough where you feel like, oh, I can afford to give a little bit. So anyway, I've belabored the point. You keep swooping in with very succinct little...
There's a lot to say on this.
Yeah.
I mean,
and there's a heart that you want to have communicated. That's the thing.
Yes, because you could hear the same thing in different ways. And that's why I think, Jay, you and I are trying to be really, we're choosing our words and how we're describing this carefully. I would encourage you, I already said it earlier, but if this is, you know, if you're flooded with ideas, thoughts, questions, wanting to pray or talk with someone about it, we want to do that. There are people in our congregation, by the way, too, who are gifted in this area of helping people sort through finances and sort through budgets and things. And that's a beautiful ministry that is among us, too. Let us know. We would love to connect you with resources that could be helpful and have that more personal conversation that you might need.
Yeah, and I also want to make sure it's clear because often I assume things and then I realize I shouldn't assume things that I mentioned it in the sermon, but we function as a church where our finances are open and, you know, all of our members get access to like where's our money going? It's not a surprise, you know? And, we always want to be really above board that we realize like, I am not in trying to encourage giving because like, of our need. I kept wanting to come back to that, but I do want to end with that, that I do echo, and I know you do too, Jeff, what Paul said, like, I want people to give, mm-hmm. not that I'm speaking of being in need. I don't want people to give so our budget is met. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to give so that we don't have a deficit. I want people to give because I want to see people grow in their faith and in generosity and experience like that kind of intimacy with God. I want to see fruit of faith. Whatever God provides for us, like I said, we're going to continue to do ministry at like whatever it is. I mean, imagine if we could have 1,000 people here who are all, you know, in the bottom tax bracket and living paycheck to paycheck. Guess what? That's how most of the church functions across the world. Like there are thriving churches in rural China where people have nothing and God does incredible things. So we're never asking to give, in order, like as a being in need. That's not how the church family functions. And so it's not how we'll function. And, And just to give people that kind of confidence. And if you have been, you know, in situations where you've been burned in the past, you know, we can process through that too. And you mentioned it, Jeff, that you've had some bad experiences. I've had some mm-hmm. bad experiences. But don't let those bad experiences keep you from what God is actually saying through his word and what he is offering you through his word. Like, don't miss out on that. That's the desire.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Is that your closing statement?
I was just thinking, like, yeah, it's an important conversation.
Yeah.
We need to be having it. I'm glad we got to do this podcast about it.
I'm glad you agree with me. I want to say, that's my favorite statement from you.
Just agree with me.
I agree. Yeah, like that ever works. All right. Well, we hope it's been helpful. Always, if you have questions or need to process through any of this, let us know. You can email us at connect@faithpastorgo.com or join us on Sunday and talk to us on a Sunday. We do these just hopefully to kind of help you process it a little bit more, the things that we believe God is teaching us and what he's saying in his word. So we hope it's been helpful in that way to you. Until next time, grace and peace.